We are back with part two of How to Hunt a 30. It's kind of the name we're going with. The Slide In Podcast. We're filming this the same day, so I think we'll have a different name in our YouTube title. Hopefully one that our great listeners have put. If for whatever reason we don't, leave more comments in this video about what you want to see. Kelly's on a coffee break. He'll be right back.
Coffee break.
So part two, you know, in the first iteration of this, we talked about how to hunt a 30, and we spent a lot of time discussing the types of water, you know, trying to find systems where they actually are, you know, kind of how you came about these realizations. And I think in part two, I want to talk tactics. So let's say we are in one of my favorite lines of yours from a show that we shot earlier this year. You know, you cracked a big fish on a streamer. Can't remember where we were, but, you know, I put the camera in your face and said, "All right, Kelly, tell me what happened." And you said, "Well, we are where the fish are and we have the right thing on." And so I think, you know, it's simple, but I think it's beautiful that, so let's say we are where the fish are.
Mm-hmm.
How do we figure out if we have the right thing on? What's the process?
Mm. Copy that. Well, you know, one thing about fishing, and I don't care if it's deep sea or if it's bluegills, fish come on and go off. They just don't always bite, right? It's just one of those things. And I don't care if you're a bait angler or if you're a spin caster, whatever you are, fly, it still happens. I mean, people who troll for a living in the Great Lakes get skunked, and not very often, but it happens. And so you got to have the right day, obviously, and you can't just beat yourself to death over a bad day. It just, you know, sometimes things don't work. But as far as to know what you've got the right stuff, usually it's a sequence of events getting to the right stuff. You've got to, and for me particularly, you know, the only thing I can go off, you know, guiding and all that, for me and my anglers or whatever, you and I, when I go out, I like to go for the color first. That is my, and most everybody knows that, what I do is I have a sequence of events. And I also carry a drying board, drying board in my boat, or I put them on, like, because I have my fly pod or my drift boat, I've got carpet on that deck and I can set them out. And I think that's really important, is that you see your sequence. You sequence your fly colors. And so, and I don't like to hold flies very long. Everybody's heard me say that a million times, but I've got a sequence of events that I go through. So my first one is color. And I go through and I hunt that color. And I have a habit of starting white. I like to start with a white fly because I can track it easy. I can see where my rhythms are. If my finger hurts or whatever, you know, your hand hurt, I'm not able to do something. I just get to watch it. It's a habit. And so I go big contrast, white to black to tan to olive to chartreuse to yellow. Like that. And I have a sequence. And I don't really care what it is. It doesn't have to be my sequence. It can be anybody's sequence. It's just that what I don't like to see people do is go from white to gray and then to, or from olive to dark olive. It make bold moves to see, and you'll see if the fish comes and shows. Will they do something? They don't have to hit you. They just have to, whew, yeah, I saw it, you know, there I'm alive. And so that to me is important, because you can hold a fly for way too long. It's just not on the bite, right? It's they're not on that color, and you go a half hour, 40 minutes, and usually you do it because the day before you had a great day. Yesterday I had a great day on white. You know, today it's sucking, and your ego won't let you off of it. Bad habit. Keep moving, go through your colors, and whatever your duration is, for me it's 5 minutes is pretty much maximum. And I've done it longer, obviously. I've said, oh, I'll go 15 on this one. I just get a gut feeling. Seldom does that does that work? It just doesn't for me. And so I go through a color pretty quick, you know, and I build them on the side of the boat or wherever you're, if you've got, if you're walk angling, I keep a box that has nothing in it, and I put them in and I see it, and I see my sequences. And so then if they show on it, but they're not eating, the next thing you have to do is you have to figure out why, if they showed on it, they didn't eat it, it's your fault. Because they showed, you elicited the strike, and then you didn't sell the package. You got it right there, but then the fish said no, and it blows away from you, right? And so at that point, you have to say, well, what was I doing? So if you were burning the shit out of it, if you're just ripping back, you know, and they're coming up and they're doing this, well, the obvious next step, because you know that there's show to the color, is you change your cadence of your retrieve. If you were burning it, slow it down. If you were going slow, pick up or jig it. Do something. And don't let me forget about the jiggy thing, but when we go into details later on this. But it's like, do something. Do not, too often you watch anglers say, the one that really gets me is he missed it. That is such a crock of shit. They do not miss their food. They eat for a living. Mike Craig had one of the greatest lines ever. And I said that the fish missed his fly. I don't remember. We were swinging for steelhead. And he dry flies. And I said, he missed it. And he goes, yeah, when's the last time you missed your face with a cheeseburger? They don't miss. They do not miss. And if they just simply turn off. Right. They come at it wide open. And something at the last minute, remember, they do this every day of their life. And as great as I think this fathead kitty is in the water, it still doesn't look like shit. It does not look like something alive. As great as you think your fly is, and all of a sudden maybe, you know, you're burning the hell out of it. And on a sidebar to this burning the hell out of it thing, the most thing done wrong when you have a fish coming at you is you stall that thing in front of it. It'd be one thing if you were going and going and stalling it and going and going and stalling it and that cadence is developed and the fish is digging the stall. It's another thing to be, because most people are rope pullers and they do this a lot, which isn't terrible. It's just mono. You should have more retrieves. But they're burning it and burning it. They see it and they stop. Well, nothing stops in nature. Shit doesn't just stop and go, oh, I'm just going to die right in front of you. No, and you'll see this. They just roll out on you so quick. So,
what's the analogy?
Huh? That a gazelle doesn't die in front of a lion.
It does not present its ass to a lion, right?
Well, though, that's on a tail first fly. So.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but nothing just dies. And it's just the same when we talk about throwing flies tail first. The analogy that Braden was talking about was that a gazelle doesn't back his ass into a lion's mouth. It just isn't natural, right? Nor is it natural for a gazelle to be running his ass off trying to get away from a lion and just say, I'm done. I'll just stop. Freaking lion might turn around and run. I don't know. If he turned around and faced him, he might.
It's the expression, run for your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so as you're going, that's usually your biggest mistake. It's like, and you hear it in the boat. People do this. They squat like they're going to piss, and they push their rod. And then the fish is gone. And they say, oh, I missed it. No, you blew it. That's on you. And everybody does it. I do it. Everybody does it. You know, you see it, or just happen to be pausing. But first is your color selection for me.
So,
and then it's your cadence.
I want to talk about that real quick with the color theory. You know, I worked in the shop for you for a few years before I started doing the video thing. Mm-hmm. And the number one thing that I would say beginner to intermediate streamer anglers ask when they come in is, what color are they eating?
Mm-hmm.
And my response is always, well, there's like, I like black, white, and olive. Those are my primary colors that I fish. Now I fish a lot of tan, I fish chartreuse, I fish yellow, I fish them all. But I think the important thing is having options. And I think the hard part for beginner streamer anglers is the actual belief that color matters. Now, the only way to believe it is to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one, a sidebar, if you go check out the first episode we ever did of The Fly Show, there's a very obvious example that, in my mind, that this is true. You're fishing olive, we're rolling a fish every, you know, once in a while, you switch to yellow and immediately it's on. Mm-hmm. And it was right when you changed the fly.
First cast.
It is true. This color theory works. It's just you have to trust it and you have to have the faith that it works.
That day you asked me why it's working, I said, well, because we're in the right spot and it's got the right thing on.
Yeah.
Remember that went off and we went back to yellow and just beat the shit out of them. We were done filming.
Yep.
And remember we put on that stack blonde and it just was like, oh, shit, we should have done this about 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
And, you know. But that's just databasing your memories, you know, and trying to keep it going. But color, you know, there's people that argue that. I don't, whatever. I just know what works for me, and I can replicate. And I know that is, to me, is the most critical thing, is getting through that color. Now, these are almost the same, and it has the same with speed, right? It's the same with your retrieve. If all you have is rope pulling, that's all you have. If all you have is jerk stripping, that's all you have.
So let's break that down for those who might not know. Rope pulling is simply pointing at the fish and stripping your line.
Just this, you know, just like you throw it out and you're stripping the line. This is what you've got.
Yep.
It's very hard to go slow with that because you might think you're still moving your fly, but if you slow it down, your fly is now at a total dead drip. He's just flopping around in the sky. And vertical, you know, we just did a thing on that the other day. The jerk strip is you animate the fly with your rod, and it's always on a horizontal. I don't know if my head's cut off here or not.
Probably.
All right. Well, the jerk strip is, I probably cut that off, but the pulling the rope is when you just, you're in the boat or you're walking, and this is how you strip your fly. And you don't have the ability to do much other than pull it in pretty big, aggressive movements. If you try to slow down, if you're not static, if you're not tight to that, nothing's happening. And if it is, it's really not much you're doing. So the next step is called the jerk strip, where you jerk the rod and strip the excess, pointing the rod back at the fly, which allows you to go tap, 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 boom, 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 little tiny moves, pop, 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 strip the excess, and you're tap, tap, tap. The third one, and to me, I prefer people maybe even to learn this one because it's easier for some reason to learn up and down as it is to this. If you're used to pulling the rope with the jerk strip, you pull the rod horizontally across the surface of the water. You pull the rod, maybe it's one, two, three, or just one, and you strip the excess. If you're used to doing this, when you first start doing a jerk strip, you will do them at the same time. You will go, oh, shit, and you'll end up over here, right? And so you just have to slow down, and you just got to figure it out. But the third one, and probably what I do, I'm missing one wheel with this chair. I'm flopping all over the place. And so the third one is, which I think is maybe more important than the other ones, and the one I'd never see anyone do, ever. I see Johnny and Braden, the guys we fish with, do it, but it's called a vertical jig. And so it's identical to the jerk strip in the fact that the rod is what's moving the fly, and you're picking the rod up like this, you're picking your tip up like that. Maybe it's one, maybe it's staggered two or three, whatever. But you pick it up and you strip the excess as a line drops, right? And so you pick it up. And now this is your slower, less active, less this, and more just kind of, whew, I'm a swimmy little whatever I am. I'm a leech, I'm a minnow, I'm happy, I'm not racing away from you, and your cadence changes. And the one thing about doing a vertical jig is that people don't do this at the same time. People, if you say, pick your rod up like this, they will not pull the rope.
Right.
When they learn to jerk strip and you say, just tap it this way, they go, both at the same time. So your vertical jig is just up, 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 and drop, pick it up, and you're just getting your fly to do this, right? So it's maybe as critical as fly color, is to getting through the rotation as it is to say, oh, I've only done this. I have only ripped the shit out of this fly. I have never slowed the fly down. So I think they're very close, but I still think that the finding the color is first. So once you, I mean, it's they're equally as important, but and I kind of skipped on this. So you see the fly, you're burning the hell out of it, and you're seeing the fly go like this crazy, and they're zooming, they're giving you drive-bys, but they're not eating it. Think about it, and then slow it down. Do if you were going fast, slow it down. If you're going slow, go fast. But don't just say, oh, don't look at the like a cow at a new gate going, oh, what the hell is that? Think, what the hell's going on? Why did I have three fish show and not eat it? Well, they didn't miss the damn thing like people will tell you. They did not ever miss it. You screwed up. I screwed up. Braden screwed up. And so change something. Don't just ride that pony until it dies. You will not change. If you don't change the speed of the fly, it's probably, you're going to do it all day. It'll just do the same thing all day until they go off.
Yep. Sisboof?
Sisboofoo. Go for it.
In today's sisboofoo, or things you should buy from us, shit you should buy from us, I think is what it is. Sisboofoo. I just like the way it sounds. Yeah. You ever seen that Bundle of Ruski commercial?
No. Really rolls off the tongue, though, kind of like syphilis.
Yes. Bundle of Ruski. Sisboofoo. In today's sisboofoo, we're going to talk about tippet, in particular fluorocarbon. And I, in full disclosure, I work for Cortland, but 8 years before they start, before I went to work for Cortland, we brought this ultra premium tippet in, and it's fluorocarbon tippet. And I want to just quickly, I want to tell you a couple things about tippet. And in the general world of monofilament, I really don't see that much difference in tippet. I have my personal likes and dislikes. Probably our number one selling tippet in our store is the one I like the least. But in the mono world, I just don't really see much difference. Our number one selling fluorocarbon is the one that I think's the worst. And my favorite, and it has been for 8 years, and it's not because I just started with these guys about, I don't know, 3 months ago. And I've always done a lot of stuff with Cortland as far as their fly lines. But I brought this in, and I would tell you that I think this is, without a doubt, the single best fluorocarbon in the world, period. And I say that completely from experience. My rep gave me some of this stuff. And I really didn't associate Cortland with fluorocarbons. I was a Seaguar guy, and then there was Rio, and that's probably my least favorite of all of them, and it's our number one seller. I would say that the Ultra, the premium, is 2 pounds stronger by fishing experience than any other one that's on the market. I think it is the strongest. I think it's as supple as any of the other ones. Everything that I want out of a tippet, but I would truly encourage you to take a shot, in particular nymph anglers. And if you're a lake person, this is the only line I have not fished another one in 8 years. I've tried a bunch of them. I've tried everybody else's, and a lot of them that tell me, oh no, ours is stronger, ours is better. We don't do that by company. We do it by experience. I go out, I fish it. I even started fishing this stuff for streamers a little bit. In particular, I take the OX and I do it between my trailers. It's really loose and it's supple. It's just incredible. But this is a completely from experience thing. I don't make any money because I said that. It is simply that this is the best fluoro I've ever had. And the irony is that the number one seller is the one that I like the least. And so I'm just saying, I would love you to try this, and for that matter, everything in our store I'd love you to try, obviously. But one thing I can assure you, we will never do one of these commercials where we say, or these whatever we're doing, we will never do one they don't believe in. We will, and everybody on earth says that, but We don't. And so hope you give it a try. They're all the same money. All the stuff's the same. But I guarantee you, if you are a nymph angler, your 4X will now be stronger than your hook. It will be stronger than the nymph hook you're using. So you got to be aware of that. It is absolutely the best stuff on the market.
So I think two things are really important, kind of talking about these retrieves. Something that, you know, we talked about in an episode of the Fly Show before was using a white fly to practice, whether mm-hmm. it's Dungeon, Flathead Kitty, Zoo Cougar, you know, even a Slick Willy acts the same way because you can see it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for people to go out, people who only pull the rope, go out with a big fly and watch, right? Like mm-hmm. try these different retrieves and see if you can slow the fly down, if you can jig the fly, if you can stall it, you know, tap it multiple times. And then the second thing that I wanted to point out was when you're talking about the vertical action, mm-hmm. the vertical jig, to me, what it really unlocks, besides the important part of slowing your fly down, is different angles when wade fishing. So I do a lot of wade fishing, especially in small water where you can't throw downstream. You can't really throw across. You're almost exclusively throwing upstream, throwing big streamers upstream. And the only way you can possibly keep up with that fly is by doing a vertical jig. And so you're essentially, it's not even necessarily a jig at that point, and that rod is going to climb. It's like, you know, we just put out an Instagram video saying, don't turn your ass, get behind it. Well, at a certain point in fast water, it's going to happen. So keep your retrieve short, but that vertical action allows you to stay facing your fish mm-hmm. and stay tight and animate your fly.
Facing
so to
fishes.
Me, that vertical action is huge for wade fishing, mm-hmm. throwing upstream or quartering across.
You know, we didn't really touch on it, too, is that the vertical, just before I forget, it to me is a very cold water thing, too.
Yeah.
That it allows you to have a technique that is oriented to a slowed down fish. Like right now, the water's what, 40, 42 maybe? I don't know. That's cold ass stuff, yeah. right? And so it allows you that. But back to the beginning, I forgot what we were doing. What was it?
Retrieves.
I know, but what was the. We were on the speed thing, and then what were you going to talk about? What was your point?
Well, so we did changing flies, mm-hmm. then changing retrieve speeds. So kind of tactics in hunting mm-hmm. these fish. What are the other changes you're going to make?
So we did speed?
Practicing fishing.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. You asked me about practicing. And so, and you know, I've said this in so many interviews and podcasts and seminars. In particular, I started saying it about fly tying. People do not practice their craft. They do not practice fishing, and they do not practice, in particular, fly tying. They consider tying flies practice. It's not practice. If you suck at spinning collars, if all you do is get to that point and you get to the collar and go, shit, I suck at this, I hate this part, you'll never get better. But if you'll simply just tie collars,
right?
Just tie the collar, burn a patch of hair that big, at the end of it, you will be great at spinning collars. And what anglers I have never in my life seen do, and I preach it constantly, they do not practice fishing. They just go fishing. So in particular, I like to see people. I tell people this all the time. Go out with a white fly. You want to take a big fathead kitty? Great. You want to take a woolly sculpin that big? Cut the hook off the thing. Go where you... I don't know how to put this, because you have to take this fishing, catching the fish out of your mind. And you have to go out and you practice two or three retrieves, because I'm telling you, if this is all you have, that's all you have. That's like having one color of fly and one retrieve. You just left most of your fish in the water. If you'll take 10 minutes a day, go out and take the fly and try to make it do little things, right? Make it do this. And watch your fly. Use a white fly so you can see it happening. Cut the damn hook off of it. Because I'm telling you, I gave up doing on-water seminars. I did a seminar once up between the lakes for some group, and there was like 8 guys in it, I think. And I waded in front of them in 10 inches of water, and I waded back and forth about 3 times. I finally says, anybody curious what I'm doing? Yeah, what are you doing? I says, I want you to understand there's not a damn fish for 30 yards of this place. So when we do this and I ask you to do the manipulate the fly with your rod and not this, you will realize there's no fish to be caught, right? Don't do anything but think we're here to learn to do this. 7 of 8, as soon as they did it, they threw out, they're like, oh, and they started this. They just froze up. Absolute brain fart. Totally shit the bed. Absolutely didn't learn a thing. I said, I walked up to this guy. I says, if I told you your thing was on fire, I don't think you'd hear me. They just like, do the same thing they did their whole life. And it was like this whole mentality, I've got to catch the fish. I got to catch the fish. If you go out and learn, I was watching a bass show one day and this guy was skipping under these docks. And he says, you know, you don't learn to do this if you don't learn to do this.
Right.
I wonder what that meant. You got to skip the goddamn, you got to skip under the dock. And you have to do that when you're fishing. You've got to go, if you just go out and do not say, I'm going to practice, right? You just will revert back to where you were. Once you get it that you do this, it's like, oh, that was kind of cool. Take a jiggy fly. Go out and take a Nancy P and just make it do that. Just watch it. See, look at it. I'm doing that. And then pull your rope and see if it does the same thing. It's not going to do the same thing. You know, we design flies to do things. They're not just to throw out and throw in the damn water and pull back. A Nancy P stripped through the water like this is kind of marginal, you know. But you get one that does this, not so marginal. Because it's doing what the fly was designed. You take a MEP spinner, throw the thing out and pull it up, throw it downstream and burn it back. It's not going to catch a damn thing. It's made to go slow blade rotation. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a spinner. It's a MEP spinner. It's a blade. And it goes, womp, womp, womp. And it's made to go slow, not to burn fast. Some flies are made that. If you took a dry fly and you stripped it across the surface, you probably wouldn't get as many fish if you had a good dead drift. Unless, of course, you're fishing crane flies. Now, that's another story. But things are made to do something. So I encourage people to practice. If you, any other sport in the world, any
golf,
sport,
golf.
I used to ask guys all the time. I mean, and most of them became such good friends. When I was in Michigan in particular, you got a 20-year history of guiding basically the same people for years and years and years. And I used to pick on them insatiably. It's like, you know, Braden, you are getting worse. Yeah, kiss my ass. Oh, yeah. You know, and it's like, because most anglers only fish 15, 20 days a year, right? And so every year it's a relearning. But I would ask these guys, all of them, do you golf? Oh, yeah. Do you ever go to the driving range? Oh, yeah, 3 times a week. When's the last time you practiced fishing? Kiss my ass. And I was like,
it's really hard to learn how to hit a sand shot on the course.
Yeah.
Go put 30 balls in the sand trap, figure it out, and then you don't have to think about it so much when it means something.
That rote thing, that when it becomes ingrained in your brain.
Muscle memory. Right?
Yes. When muscle memory, and I told you this when I was doing the other stuff, and I don't remember if it was Joe, but I had in the gym, we were fighting, I think it was Joe Bird, he was the Olympic boxing coach, and Chris Bird, silver medalist, and I think it was him, but I'm not sure, and it might have been another guy, I don't, but he said, everything you teach a person before 20 is rote, it is ingrained in their brain. After 20, everything you teach them, they have to relearn every time they get in the ring. Because, and that's muscle memory. So right. The difference between certain anglers and you or Johnny is that Johnny walks up to a flat and he's looking at a weed bed. He's looking at a checkerboard, and he can see the gaps, and he knows he's going to take his fly, you know, skating along. He's going to dump it into that little depression, and he's going to come back out of it, and he's going to have all this retrieve. He's going to have all this action he can put into his fly. Comes onto a big checkerboard. He's got five big watercress beds. He's going to come through. He's going to burn the shit out of it coming over to get that wavelength, that Hertz wavelength that's pushing out to the fish. It's telling the fish is there. They live by vibration. They do not live by sight. You could blind a trout and he'll just fine. Poke both his freaking eyes out. He'll eat the rest of his life. They're totally nocturnal. They feed off of vibration. And so you're burning this fly, and all of a sudden you come up to this gap this wide between weed bed to weed bed, and there's this gap right here, and you come up, and you're going, bah, 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 and then you stall that fly, and it comes up and does two of these, and boom, boom, and it takes off all over again. That's life. That's triggering a response. That's doing something, not just pulling a damn rope like this. And so you're going like this. You can't learn that on the water. Right. You suddenly see a checkerboard. Oh, shit, that's a checkerboard. This is where the big ones are. Ha, ha, ha. That's all you can do, right? You got to learn to practice. You got to practice. And it's so simple. You take 10 minutes. And I encourage people to cut the damn hook off because they just will think they're going to catch one. And I get it. If you don't fish very often, you don't want to waste time.
Right.
But you're wasting all the time if you aren't.
By doing the same dumb shit over and over again.
Yeah, you're wasting all of it, not just part of it.
I mean, I love my sports analogies. You need to deepen your bag of tricks, right? Like Kyrie Irving doesn't have one dribbling move, right?
Yeah.
He's got 75, maybe more than that. Wide receivers don't run one route, right? You need to have a lot of tricks in your bag. And all it does, like we talked about earlier, increases your odds.
In the fighting world, I was listening to a guy announcing a fight. It might have been Floyd. It might have been Mayweather. I can't remember who it was. And he says, you know, there's 12 rounds in this fight. And this guy's going to figure out, you're going to come in and he's going to be tapping. And he's going to figure out that's what you do. This is 1-2. This is 1-2. You better have a 3 and a 4 in there because on the third round, he's going to have everything you've got down and you're going to eat leather. And it's no different than the trout. I don't really believe trout have memories. I don't believe they have cognitive reasoning. I think they're creatures of habit. But if the fly, I do believe that they know what nature is. And so if the fly's coming and it's not acting properly, you have a pretty poor chance of triggering that response.
Yep.
And if a crayfish comes by doing Mach 3 straight across the water, when they don't really actually swim, they hardly ever do. They're always doing this, and they're very close to bottom normally anyway. But I just think they know what nature does.
Well, they have instinct,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But I don't think... I don't know. I just, especially living on this river where you catch so many fish so many times, so repetitively, you know, I've told that story 100 times. I got the same fish in 3 minutes, 3 times.
Yeah.
And he had a chunk out of his back, his dorsal fin, it's cut out. He had a 3-dip in his mouth, and I caught him on the same 3-dip, dropped it, trying to get the hook out. The other hook dropped it, broke my hook off. So now he's got one here and one here, and he's got the notch out of his dorsal. He made 3 casts, and I get him again, and this time I get my fly out, but I don't get the other one. And 3 minutes later, I caught that dame, and I got all the flies back. But he's same fish. So, and there was a ton of midges, and he's just feeding, right? So I don't think they have much of a memory. It's
one of my favorite lines of yours is, we tend to give trout a lot of credit when we're not catching them.
Yeah.
And then when we are catching them, we're like, oh, this is dumb as shit.
Yeah.
What?
Or we're smart as shit.
Yeah.
One or the other. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, to me, it's one of the few pastimes, sports, that we don't practice. People will practice their cast.
Yep.
You love to cast in the
yard. I love casting.
Yeah, that's great. Now, that's cool. Now the fly is out there, but you don't know how to get the thing back to you.
Right.
Wow. That's.
I mean, I think there's definitely diminishing returns in casting, and this is probably a whole nother podcast we'll do about this. But
yeah,
you need to get to a certain level of competence, and then after that, the difference between, you know, a good caster and the world's best doesn't lead to that many more fish, right?
No, not even. I've guided several world champions, and it, you know, it's just, and friends, you know, there's it, the fly's out. That's great. The fly's where it belongs.
Yep.
Now and what? we have nothing else except a dead drift. And so, and modern streamer techniques and the retrieves are truly the difference between swing, you know, when we used to just tail first swing a bucktail, and an animated thought process that you're triggering a response. And that's really the difference between 1975 and 1990. I mean, that's from a passive swing. And then, so we worried about our cast. What if you're on the bonefish flat and every time you threw it a fish, you just let it sit there? So you don't get many fish, right? You have to learn to do something. Right. And if you burned your shrimp pattern back like that, 90 miles an hour, probably not a lot of fish. I don't know. I'm going to have to ask Andy. I haven't caught enough any of that shit to know. But I've caught enough to know that when I screwed it up, they blew out. One bad retrieve, you know, flies out there, here comes the things, and I do have something wrong, and 30 of them go like this. Right. I'm like, something wasn't right.
Well, it's kind of the same with the fish following your streamer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when it turns around, something up, whether you know it or not.
Yeah, you did something wrong.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked color, we talked kind of actions, being able to change things up. One thing I wanted to discuss was kind of the mentality of...
Me peeing so much?
Yes.
It has to do with acidity of coffee.
Okay, so jumping back in, we talked about a little bit in our first episode, but a big kind of light bulb moment for me was talking about the mentality behind streamer fishing. And it clicked when we were down in Chile. We were in that canyon. It was about 2 minutes before you cracked that 2-footer. And you were talking about you need to be hunting, not hoping.
Mm-hmm.
And if fishing was just, like if swinging flies was all you could do, you wouldn't fish. And the light bulb that went off for me was swinging flies works. People have caught fish on it for years. You know, I've caught fish on it. I still think there's better ways to hunt giant fish. I think your methods are a lot better for that, which we'll get into that in a whole nother show. But I think that a huge part of the methods that, maybe not a huge part, but part of the methods you've developed are because it keeps you engaged the entire time, right? You're not watching birds. You're not doing something else, and it's percentages, right? Your fly is in the water fishing. You are looking at structure. You're bringing it over the top. It's engaging, right? It's not hoping. It is actively hunting fish, and I think that that's a huge part of hunting these big fish is being engaged the entire time you're around the water. Like, it's just like anything. Hard mm-hmm. work will pay off eventually. What do you think about all that?
Well, I mean, I want that T-shirt, hope less, hunt more. I mean, and again, back to my first episode we did about this, about reading water to me. I pick on Euro nymphers and swingers equally, and I do both. And it's more for fun for me than it is for anything. And I grew up swinging. I mean, if you go back in time, when I first started, my dad was a guide in 1940, and pre-dry fly, all that stuff, dry flies really didn't exist so much back then. You had damp flies, which were wet, or semi in the film, wet flies. But I was taught to swing, right? And you swing. And then I was taught to fish at night, swinging wet flies. It wasn't mousing back in the day. It was wet fly, big wet flies, like that big. They might have a cast or a brace either. You could have two or three at a time. But the return was not what it is when, hence the term of the first book, modern streamers, a modern technique. And what we were talking about before, tail first fly is just not a common thing. And I frequently bring up during the seminars, that when I was diving, I, on several occasions, saw pretty big-ass brown trout, over 2 footers, that had trout in their peripheral right here. One, I remember one that had one kind of hanging down by its ventral fins, and then there's another fish right here, right in front of it. Both rainbows.
Right? So it kind of dispels the myth of if you catch a little fish, it means there's not a big one nearby.
Or the water, either that or, you know, they were buddies. I don't know. maybe it was the only vegan trout in the river, but it's just that, you know, when you see the difference, and when you see the difference of the active, and not every day. I mean, hell, I wondered that, you know, when you and I and Jerry were out and you're swinging, there's certain fish that just like and certain that don't. I mean, nothing works all the time. And nothing works ever. You know, never, some things work today and not for a week or two afterwards. And that's why what was your analogy about the more balls and bag of tricks?
Got to deepen your bag.
Yeah. So, the whole idea of not one over another isn't necessarily true. I mean, I do it, and I swung, like I said, when I first started streamer fishing. Tom Noms was a streamer guy. He liked dredging. He liked to throw his fly up, mend it down, keep the head going downstream, and just feed it line. And just let that thing go wherever it was. He caught a lot of big fish. Tom is a great angler, still is. But boring as hell. I mean, just literally boring. And it was kind of taking all the water as one. Not really, because he's an incredible water reader. But the key for me is that you identify the water, right? And again, back to this duplication. Because I love the idea of that I identify, especially in a boat where I have no time. I love going to new water and going, oh yeah, I got that. And for me, it's kind of like in a whitetail hunting situation. I'm not a big, I don't hunt whitetails. I've just hung out with whitetail hunters all my life. But I remember one of my uncles shot a 10 point. He was smoking a cigarette, tending his fire, and one walks up to him and he shoots it. And making coffee, too, right? So everything possible other than, you know, dancing a jig out there and didn't have shark or a fluorescent orange. So there's everything possibly wrong, and he shoots it. Well, do that the rest of your life, see how many more, you know, 10 points walk up to you. None. And then you've got the Shockies of the world and these superstar hunters and meat hunter and all those guys that are superstars, right? They duplicate it they got to do it 23 times a year because they've got 23 episodes.
Right.
Right. So to go down and see, I like to see, like, I'm hunting, not hoping. I'm not smoking a cigarette, building a fire, and a 10-point buck walks up to me at 20 yards and says, hey, kill me. Brown trout don't do that very often, but it does happen. It does happen. A friend of mine caught one of the biggest fish ever on the Boardman River with his rod under his arm, lighting a cigarette. And he didn't. And it was like his first time fishing.
Yep.
I can't remember. I think it was Barry Andrews' brother-in-law or something like that. Barry Andrews is a phenomenal fly tire angler in Michigan. I think it was his brother-in-law or cousin or some shit. I don't know. They got this giant fish, right? And it was like, here's this rod bending. But I would quit fishing, if it was that mindless and stupid and I didn't feel like I engaged the process and the net result was completely me, I would quit.
Right.
Right? It would just stop. It'd be so boring.
Yep.
And so I love the idea that as every single time I look at water, I see through the water, I see what's under the water, I know why the water does this or why it crossed each other like that, because I've been a student of observation while diving all those hours, hundreds of hours of looking at shit underwater, and I see it, and not everybody wants to do that. Yep. You know, not everybody wants to do that, but I wanted that answer. And so I'm going through this water I'm looking at that, and I'm looking down here, and I'm looking ahead of the boat, or if you're walking, whatever, and I'm looking, I'm reading the water, and I say, this is how I replicate good behavior. So I read it, I see it, my mind tells me I've got three fish and run just like this, and I put the fly, and I kick its head so it goes downstream, and I stall, and I do all the things that take, that, you know, years and years and decades of fishing tells you, and I do it right, and it, I get a duplication. That's success, right? That is success to me. That's your sand wedge thing. When you come out of the sand wedge and you cup it, right?
Yep.
That doesn't come free.
Nope.
And so, and that's the difference between trophy hunting and fishing, is if your mentality is, I want to learn everything. It's also the difference between pellet pigs and game farm shooting, which, and everybody's different. There's nothing wrong with being casual. There's nothing right. wrong with going fishing and hoping it up. And man, that was great. You know, it kind of, it's kind of the youthful part of fishing, throwing a bobber out and watching the bobber. That's cool. And every once in a while you get a big old bass from your fishing bluegill. Yep. That's all cool. It's all fun. But at some point, many anglers decide they want a challenge. They want to do it. And when I said I would quit if I was just swinging, it wasn't a reference to the style of swinging a fly. I still swing flies. So do you. I mean, you do it a lot. But I would stop if that's the only thing I had. It would bore me to death.
Right.
And I would want to, in particular, because we fish from boats so much. And so I see the river coming at me. I want to dissect it in advance. I love fishing with anglers that I see. They're constantly, and there's a difference between being guided and fishing. When you're being guided and the guide keeps telling you, I don't really count it as much, right? If the guide's saying, right here, see that bucket, I need it right in that bucket. No, in the backside. Okay, oh, great, you got one. You wouldn't have got shit if somebody wasn't coaching you from the edge, yep. right? I'm not talking about that. Not that there's anything wrong with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love guiding Johnny. And and so, but I, when you start saying, I want to, we started this on the hunt for a 30, right? And there's that part of it. When you are on the hunt for a 30, which means you want to take it to the next step. I want to be the one who said, I like a blind fish, a fish caught, with, you had no idea that you caught, right? You didn't do a damn thing.
Yep.
They don't count. Right. I mean, I literally, if I was done with it and go, man, I'm done. And I was doing the, what did the Miles call it? The hero retreat?
Trophy
retreat?
Trophy retreat, I think.
Our buddy Miles, we were down in Chile, and he said, every time I'd reel in when we were done, he'd go, trophy retrieve. If I got a 30 on that, I wouldn't even tell you.
Yeah, I don't know if we could put that in the show.
I wouldn't allow it. Yeah. I wouldn't. I mean, it's like, at some point, you got to earn your shit, right? And so that's the whole point of knowing all the, putting all those pieces together.
Yes.
It doesn't, and again, can you replicate the hero or the trophy retreat, whatever they called it?
Is it dumb luck or did you trigger that fish
feeding?
Did you cause that reaction or like?
Exactly.
And it bothers me because I know a lot of the giant fish, a lot of state records are caught by people who don't really fish that much.
Yeah,
and so there's a huge aspect of dumb luck to it that keeps me up at night. But it also helps me sleep and it helps me enjoy my fishing knowing that I do have control over what I'm doing.
I want the control, but I'm not offended if one does a dumb luck on me when I'm retrieving.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Did he just do that?
Well,
I mean, that giant that ate the dry fly.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, 25-inch buck.
I'm not throwing, like I told Andy, I'm not cutting the fucking line.
No, exactly. Like, no, I love
no,
that.
No,
yeah, not cutting. Yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, again, do it.
I think
do it twice, do it three times, make a, and then it just to me, I want to be totally engaged with anything I do. Mm. I don't like sit down. I seldom sit down and tie a fly without thinking. Right. Something made me, and it's probably why I don't tie as much. I like to sit down. Like I absolutely love Atlantic salmon fly tying, mm-hmm. watching them,
yep.
and or the result, the end result. I don't have any desire to do it. I absolutely love D and spay tying. It's not as intricate, and I see the movement that is coming from this fly while I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And my focal point is not necessarily the end, it's what's the fly going to do. Same with, I mean, for a long time, I had more dry flies than I had streamers nationally, but nobody knew it because we didn't put our names on shit back in the day. And the thought of, mostly because of Dave Ellis and Swisher and Richards, which was kind of symbiotic. They all three of them fished together, you know, forever. And they, the thought of what the fish sees, you know, mm-hmm. my original diving for trout was about that. And then the concept of the design, the fly to make it do something. And then we started designing flies, and then we had to change because we're not swinging anymore. Now we're actively retrieving. And the reason, like, you know, I'm a really good designer, but I won't put the time in. Like when I do, like when we were doing these things, right? To set one of these wings, to set that wing to do that, you got to practice to do that. When you watch these guys that are so good and they can lay these things on and they get it, and that's their, and I like that part.
Yep.
And if I sit and tie 10 of them, I can do any of that stuff, right? It takes me a while. I'm not like Andy Sabota. I mean, Andy's one of the greatest tires, and he just quit because he's too freaking good at it. I hate that guy. Skinny little prick. And so, but the marrying, and that's, the technique's cool to me, but that, the finished product. And if I, and I'm, as older I get, the more I just want to sit down and do. You know, you look at the Deck Hogans and the Bob Verdikas and guys like that, that they're spectacular tires, right? And the Charlie Cravens of the world and the Davey McPhail and all that. And I like to master that, but my brain shuts off after when I need to see that stuff moving, and I get bored with just that part of it.
Right.
So with the fishing aspect of it, I got the right fly, I know it. Like one of my bad habits in your mind or Johnny's, when the fish start eating the shit out of that fly, I'll take it off.
I mean, love that mentality, but not when we're shooting a show. Yeah, I'm trying to put fish in the boat.
I know, but my brain seizes up, which I don't have a lot of gray matter to start with, and if some of it freezes, I'm screwed, right? And so the concept of the, just making it happen has to be there over and over.
Purpose.
And yes. And so just to throw and swing and hope, it, not that there's not a ton of skill to the, I mean, it's like anything on earth, right? There's you're swinging a fly, but you're not just swinging the fly.
Right.
You're doing things to the fly, right? And for me, the whole putting all the pieces of the puzzle together, the color of the fly, the retrieve of the fly, the stalling, the accelerating, the reading the water being number one is it. And I don't, like I said, a bonus fish where you threw out and you're just, your head's up your ass and you're not doing anything is a bonus fish, should never be shown.
Right.
It's just like, that doesn't count. Because if that, what if that's the only way you could fish, right?
Yep.
I need to know at the end of the day, I saw that fish before I saw that fish.
Right. Yeah.
Mentally, I've talked about it in my seminars about this bird wing, the coolest thing I ever, I don't know how many fish I've mounted, lots, thousands. The coolest thing I ever found in a stomach was a red wing blackbird wing. It's my favorite thing. I found everything you can imagine. I found mice and frogs and every fish known to man. To find this red wing blackbird wing, to me, I'm pretty certain, I know where it was caught, the fish was caught, and I'm pretty certain the guy was mowing his lawn and mowed one dead one off and just blew it apart, and the wing ended up in the water. But a brown trout, a 28-inch brown trout, still ate the frickin' wing. It ate the wing, which is this long, right? What the hell did it look like? But what I like to think about, the fish is so savage that he came up in this red wing sitting on his little reed, beep, beep, right, and just clobbered the shit out of it, and all he got was the wing. And that's what I like to think happened. But to think of, again, I don't even know where I was going with that. Also, I thought about the red wing. But to think that that was replicable, you're not going to be able to do it twice. To think that I'm going to go out and throw a red wing blackbird wing and hope that something eats it, I couldn't. I would die with it. Right. I would die. I think I'd go back to fishing bluegills with a bobber.
Yeah. I think a really important part of what you're talking about is the mentality that goes into hunting these fish. Because at a certain point, I was just out steelheading. Sorry, let me finish that thought. At a certain point, it's like banging your head against a wall. Like you said, you're used to getting skunked. Mm-hmm. I love getting skunked because you're hunting these fish. They don't happen all the time. You might not get one a year. You might not get one a lifetime. At a certain point, you're playing a low odds game, but you have to trick yourself into staying active and staying focused, which I think is really hard. It's hard for somebody to go out and throw a streamer for 8 hours in a day. It's easy to do it for an hour and then you lose focus. And the example I was going to say is I was just out steelheading and, I've been spey fishing for a long time, but mostly for trout. I'm newer to the steelhead thing. And on day four of getting skunked, I called Johnny and said, what the hell? I mean, I can cast, I'm a good caster. I'm throwing it plenty far enough to catch fish. I've changed flies. I've changed the water I'm in. What's wrong? Johnny said, well, you just need to keep bashing your head against the wall. So then I thought back to, your conversation about hunting and not hoping. And I refocused and started looking at every single swing and doing something different on everyone, whether it's reading water, looking for structure out there, changing my angles, whatever it is to keep yourself engaged and allow yourself to continue to hit your head against the wall. So at a certain point, it's a labor of love, right? Like there's not a lot of payoff when you're hunting giant fish, or not a consistent payoff. So it's all of these little things you can do to kind of manipulate your headspace to continue to bash your head against the wall.
I wouldn't agree with that. I like getting skunked, especially when you do it for a living.
I mean, shit, I don't like doing it, but say I do.
But I would also, as I was thinking what you were saying, A, you made the mistake of saying I was casting long. B, I would say that...
On that river, you need to.
Okay. But I would say, I was thinking of your ratio. Mm-hmm. And your head banging. When you stay hunt for a 30, and I was thinking about ever since Andy and I were talking about this, and that ridiculous when he said hundreds of 30s, I would say for a great angler who fishes more than anyone believes people can, one every 5 years would be a pretty good ratio. That would be a really good ratio. Yeah. Everybody'd be happy with that. Once a decade's probably a little more accurate.
Right.
And for the average cat, without that dumb luck one?
Never.
Possibly.
Yeah.
It's like, and so, which makes it that much more exciting. I mean, that much more, it just like you bash your damn head against it. Yeah. Nobody gets great at anything overnight. I mean, right. You look at, the Olympics, and I mean, not so much with the contact sports, but the wrestlers, wrestlers in the Olympics. Most of those kids start when they're two or three. And the gymnasts, they start when they're two or three. Right. And they put their whole lives in. They may win when they're 25 and be done. But that's still 22 more years than most of us have put in for. They do it every single day.
Every single day. Andy Mill ski racing, right? I'll bet you he didn't start skiing in college.
No, not so much.
Yeah.
And I remember when I skied a lot. I worked at an ice arena. out of high school. It's funny because all my buddies are all superstar hockey jocks, right? And I didn't skate. But my first kind of job out of high school was working and driving the Zamboni and all that shit. And I one time they said, and I couldn't skate. I mean, I was a pretty good skier, but there's a really short blade. They said, we needed you to, I drove Zamboni and did maintenance and whatever, cleaned bathrooms and shit. They said, we need you to coach there's peewees and mites. Because personally, I think hockey players are the greatest athletes in the world.
I just
think they are the best. And all my buddies, like I said, they were really good. And they always made fun of me because I couldn't turn. I can't remember which direction. Probably couldn't turn to the left because I'll do nothing to the left. But I can't remember. But they said, you got to coach the mites or the peewees. Mm-hmm. Some bitches were that big. And I said, what do I do? He goes, you just basically pick them up a lot. And so I went out and I dropped the puck and they all went for it and they all fell down. And all I did was, I don't even have skates on. I'm just picking up little kids, right?
Yep.
But by the time they're 16, they're not like that anymore.
Right.
And in our sport, there are very few people who start at 3 and play, 200 days a year.
Right.
Like Andy Mill, like my buddy Nick Nixon. Nick was he was in that realm. He's a pro, and you heard me talk about him. His biggest fault was probably the most handsome man in the world, which just pissed me off and nobody else. And he's the greatest skier that ever. But Nick used to, before skiing at night, like we go after, we're a ski team, right? We're going to go run courses. Nick would get up at 4 in the morning, go to the place, set his own course, run his own course, go back up. Nobody realized, how come this guy's legs are 10 times stronger than else? He'd hop back up that mountain, come up, go back down, have to take the gates out, put them back, and then go to school, then go and do it again. Well, there's a reason you're the best there is, right?
Right.
But we don't do that so much with fishing. That's kind of the whole point. If you're around competitive people like that your whole life, fighters, skiers, wrestlers, whatever it is that you do, I don't care, gymnastics, mountain climb, I don't give a shit. We don't tend to, as a whole, that's what I kind of, why I preach so much what I do, is that if Andy Mill didn't win 5 freaking world championships and how many billions of other things he's won, because he went out casually and did something, right? And so that's when you go the difference between hunting and hoping.
Yep.
Right? It's just kind of it's an end all to, and not everybody wants to do that.
You know,
not everybody wants. So you garner what you need. And so to just kind of wrap this up thing, if you garner the fact that you need to be able to read water, you need to have X number of colors of flies, and you have to have a couple extra retrieves. It's not that tough.
Right.
It's
basic level.
Yeah.
And then you're doing it.
And then learn and practice. Right. And the whole thing about angling, and it doesn't matter if it's nymph fishing, I'm always picking on the Euro nymphers, the guys, the Lance Egan's, these guys that are so great, would be just as great if we didn't have it.
Right.
Because they are so driven, it's just what it is. And the same with the dry fly guys. It doesn't matter, because you don't just because you're fishing dry and not streamer or nymph or whatever it is, there's always this cat that's really great at it, because he didn't just go and throw it and hope something happened.
Right.
He doesn't throw it upstream and plop all that shit on top of that fish while it's feeding and say, God, I hope that thing eats it.
Right. Yeah.
No, it's just perfecting your craft. Tying, I don't care, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, and there's people who, I think you are one of them, who have shown this ability to be great at multiple things. And it just is, Andy was talking about on his podcast, you've always been a driven individual, right? You're not okay with complacency. You've always been haunted by the question of, what could I do better? What could be done better? Right.
I don't know if great is the right. I mean, that's a pretty
proficient.
That's pretty high.
Okay.
But okay at it. But I mean, I know a lot of guys a lot better than I am. And it doesn't matter. To me, that's the only thing I would agree with about the lack of competition in fly fishing. Because I really wish, I don't, even though I did that thing about don't agree with how we compete, but I great is just how, that's not achieved by like a number of fish or something like that.
No.
It's like for me, when an angler can do things with the fly, I mean, to me, that's my greatness for me personally. I just made a fly do something that nobody did before.
Right.
I started doing this and I guarantee you somebody did it before I did too, but never heard of it. And you know, you go out and you're doing this thing and I master this one thing that I, not because someone told me, but because I said, I want to learn to do something else. That's for me is the mastery. It's like fly tying. I would love to be as good as Charlie Craven or Davey McPhail or God help me if I could be as good as Deck Hogan. I would be the greatest thing on earth.
Yep.
Do I necessarily want to put the time in to set and burn 100 sets of wings and do that? No, maybe not. But my joy is just as great, you know, when I go out and I read a run. And for me, it's like, and I don't really need the fish anymore. When I read a run and the fish happens to that big rainbow that ate on that weed bed, when he came off that weed bed, my life was complete, dude. I mean, it's like, that's exact. I knew he was coming. I knew he should be there, and it happens.
Yep.
Well, that's different than throwing the thing out as far as you can and starting, and one in the middle hits it. You have no freaking idea where your fly was. You don't know what the goddamn thing was doing.
Yep.
It's just out there playing around, right? But when you see one and you stall one and you see it, that completion to all your decades of work and trying to do this stuff and seeing it happen on purpose, and that's always been my mantra, on purpose.
Right. Purpose-driven.
I made it happen, yeah. Right? And it doesn't matter if I catch a giant one or another one. I'm not trying to be better than you. I know. It's like we started this first one. I was watching the Tyson fight, and I found it very sad, right? Because I know how great that guy was.
Yep.
And he still is for a 58-year-old guy. But there's a point where, this is time to teach, right? And there's, to me, it's more about, I dig it. And the whole, but it's once there's nothing left to figure out, then it gets a little less driven. Like I said something about Andy, when we were doing the afterwards, I said, you ski anymore? He goes, man, the idea just going down back and forth just doesn't appeal to me. I shit my pants. I go, well, one, he's a downhiller. They go pretty fast. And he goes, I just don't think I could do that. And I'm like, so it's like you said, driven. But I know when I go out, I mean, there's limitations and, you know, physical, you know, your attention span, blah, 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 blah. I still dig it, but I would not dig it if I couldn't dissect my water.
Yep.
And if there weren't these things that I like to do with it to keep me actively engaged with the fact that, and I'm still hoping that there's something more. You know,
another level.
What is it that's next? And Andy asked me that same question, or Nikki, I don't remember. What's next? And I said something about topwater streamers. That's just but there's still got to be something left to learn without, like in the bass world, you have forward imagery, right? So you get to see everything. That doesn't count to me. That's something to learn. That's just a better way of doing it. And it's
a quantum leap in technology is what
that technology,
is.
Yeah. But we're not doing anything different now to catch them. We just see them, and so we did throw right to them.
Right.
Whereas before, we had to throw over here, here, and here, and here.
Hope where they are, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
But I'd even argue that I'd hope that technology doesn't invade fly fishing in the way that it has.
It's bass. Ironic that in the bass world... And for those of you who don't know, I'm an absolute junkie for bass fishing. I don't get to do it much. I watch every bass show in the world because I think they're the greatest anglers in history. Truly, I think they're. I love it when some fly guy tells me that they're Bubba's and he's still trying to figure out 10 hatches in the frickin' world, right? It's like, oh, Bubba, yeah. Bubba just made $10 million last year. And They are so ahead of the everything. They're ahead of everything that we do. And because it's so competitive. But there are a lot of them that wish, in particular in the smallmouth world, they would like to see forward imagery go away. Because it's really kind of almost, it's almost like a game now.
It's a video game.
Yeah, it's almost like it.
Which is a skill in and of itself. But like, you know, we could argue all day long about, you know, what's right and what's wrong. But how I like to see fishing is without cameras.
Mel bought me that fancy new fish finder.
Yeah.
And I hooked it up and it's pretty cool. It's not forward imagery, but it's pretty cool. But in some respect, I say that every time I go out. And sometimes I just flip it off.
Yeah.
I'm just like, man, I don't want to do this. I want to see.
It's kind of a whole nother discussion, but it's something we've talked about before. And I, you know, I talk about with people that come in the shop and they're asking me how the fishing was. And you know, if I had a great day recently, I remember a day I had on a small water around here last summer where, you know, within 10 minutes, I rolled 40 fish. I didn't land all those fish, but as soon as I cracked the code really quick, they were all over it. I landed a bunch of big fish. And I went, cool. Yeah. Like that didn't really do it for me. Didn't make my heart move.
There's a point where it does that.
There's got to be there has to be some sort of struggle, some sort of difficulty. And then you kind of overcome it to really get that valuable payoff, right? You know, you're hunting a giant fish, you don't see anything for a long time, then you get one. Like that feels so much better than just whacking. But you know, to each their own. I've never been a big numbers guy.
Well, that's the thing, like in the steelhead world, you know, I spent most of my life, that was my life. Way before the brown trout. Well, brown trout were always there, but not like it was with the steelhead. And going all over chasing them and just the numbers of days spent per steelhead. And then when I first started, went to BC, and they actually ate dry flies. And it ruined me, because now I only want to see a dry fly eat, right? And when Jerry and I and you, the three of us, were heading to BC, all I was intending on doing was dry fly.
Dry flies.
Even though it probably wouldn't have been that great compared to grease lining or getting underwater, but the payoff... For one, you know, it's the same thing.
That much more. Yeah.
But again, that's everybody's...
It's to each their own.
Yeah, most people don't want to do that. And most people want to do it a little bit more casually. Like, give me the answer and I'll go do it. And that's the Andy, Mills of the world and the rest of us, right? The guy who wins 5 world championships, that's driven. That's a little past what we do, what I do. Yep. And so, but I mean, but not everybody wants to do it, but it generally, no matter whom you speak to, it comes back to it. They will all, at some point, we all will want to say that we learned something. Very few people want to learn something half-ass and move on.
Right.
And so, and if they're listening to this, they want to move forward. And so that's how you move, you know, in my estimation, that's how you move forward is everything we talked about. As you start doing that, I'm a big fan of notebooks, right?
Data planners.
Write them down. And in the old days, and I said that in particular, I had my first ex-wife. I don't know what she did with those things, but I had a lot of journal. I still write stuff down all the time. And I do that with all my flies too. So, but I think that really helps people. And it tells you something when you, the first, I have it over at the house. Tom Noms kept one. He was my kind of first inspiration in this stuff. And just simple notes.
Yeah.
You know, sunny, 60. Water's, you know, 68 degrees, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. Got 7. You know, whatever.
All you have is your past experience,
yeah,
right?
Got him on this, got him on that. For me, I read through and then I go, kind of go, well, I didn't do this. What would happen if I, you know, it doesn't matter on those great days, just the days that are sucking.
Right.
That's why I take the flies off. When they're working really well, I take the flies off because I know they're eating this. I can I'm not so dense that I can't look around and go, well, it's sunny, it's 72 degrees, it's a, you know, southwest wind, and they're eating white and chartreuse. Wonder if they'll eat black, right? It's like...
That always sticks with me, and obviously you put that in my head, but that day where you and Jerry went up to Jacqueline's and me and Chuck and Kyler and Jake were on the other side, mm-hmm. Chuck was smoking them on the Montana Intruder doing slow strips on a spay rod. Mm-hmm. Like, we know that works. It had been working for 2 weeks really well, right. And he's smoking them. So I went in there, and he goes, where are you going to throw Intruder? I go, I'm going to throw white flathead giddy.
Yeah.
I just want to see if they're going to eat it, and mm-hmm. they did. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's more data points. And
it, you can, like, if you were a tournament angler, you would ride the pony.
Yep.
But my theory on taking the fly off is that if I can data point, okay, they didn't eat black, they ate olive, and they ate blue, whatever it is, right? The next time I go out and it's 72 and sunny with a southwest and the barometer's what the barometer is, and they won't eat white, I know that they ate that olive, whatever it was, mm-hmm. dark brown.
Yep.
They ate that the day they were eating the white, yep. right? And so it gives me another arrow in my quiver. That comes from guiding. When you're paid to be catching fish, it behooves you to have more than one arrow in your quiver. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really helps to have
tricks
multiple tricks.
Yep.
And you don't get those by riding the pony too long. If it's a great bite, it's an incredible learning process for you if you'll take off the fly that's working.
Yep.
When you can add data points to your arsenal and say, okay, they were really on white, but they were also on dark brown and tan at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, I think it takes a lot of mental fortitude to actually do that. Because, like you said, most people don't fish that much. Most people want to put some fish in the net.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's hard. It takes a lot of fish in the net to want to experiment and figure out.
In some respects, you know, when you're guiding, you can do it almost secretly.
Right.
Yeah. I used to do it with steelhead all the time. Oh, they're eating the shit out of this. I'll bet they'll eat this better.
Maybe.
Or sell it. Oh, they'll eat this way better. And not today, I guess. And I remember the first time I saw the color Charisse, and it was on it's on the Pier Marquette, and I'd never seen it. I probably tied as many egg flies as anybody in the world, and it was dirty water, shitty spring dirty water, tannicky, and I stopped, and I watched this guy catch three fish, and I saw him pick his fly up, and I go, and I kind of knew the guy. I said, what the hell is that? What color? Because we always use chartreuse, or we use cheese on that. And color and that color of water, because I don't run anything but Charisse in this red water. And he gave me a few, and we just put an ass kicking on it. And then in the fall, I started running a baby blue egg, and it was so, and I didn't tell anybody about it too much. And I never saw anybody fishing them. You know, of course, now every time I see somebody, I say, oh, I was doing that long before you wrote that article. I'm sure you were, but just never when we fished together. But
right.
And then we had an article when it had been close to 99 or 2000, and I would never write about places, and fly fishermen in particular was always wanting to sell out to get up where to. I saw I was leaving, and John asked me to write one, and he said, I said, I won't do the, I'll list rivers. So I listed the 10 top rivers that everybody in the world knew about,
yep.
right? But I did say that after October 22nd, I always fished a blue egg. Mm-hmm. And we sold out egg yarn. And the first week, the guy called me. He goes, the hell did you say about blue yarn? Because at that point, this is how we knew that it was the only people they sold. They kept it. They didn't even make it. And we were the only shop that they sold blue yarn to.
Huh.
And the guys will say, oh, that's such bullshit. I said, really, call him and ask him. He says, Jesus, we got to put it back in production. And it was like, and that came from, I've never seen this blue. And I said, what the hell, try it and see what happens. And they ate the living shit, but never in the spring. Couldn't get them to eat it in the spring. Again, it was all about numbers for guiding.
Yep.
And so every time, if all you do, it's kind of like I was just reading this article in an old magazine, Wild Steelhead and Atlantic Salmon Journal, Tom Perros rag, and he, it was a Bob York interview. He was one of the, greatest steelhead guys of all time. And he said, on something about the Kispiak, I'll fish any fly as long as it's black or red. I said, okay, there you go.
It's like, what's his name? Dale over at the Red Shed said his son's line was, any color's fine as long as it's purple.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think his kid was like 3 when he said it. I like that. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we covered some great stuff here. Different actions, having kind of a system to roll through, and then the mentality that goes into kind of hunting these big fish, and that maybe hunting big fish isn't for everyone. Some people just like to go have fun and fish, and it's fine with us. Do whatever you want as long as it's not your own imping. or Trout's Bay.
Yeah.
These guys suck. Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap it up, and hopefully everybody enjoyed that. I think we had a good time doing it, at least I did.
It was fun.
And we'll do some more of these down the line. Got any closing thoughts?
I was just saying, if you got any suggestions for down the line, we'd be happy to entertain them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Suggestions, questions, any segments you want to see us do, anything that's really been burning a hole in your mind, write in, leave comments, email us, call, whatever. Slidein.com, Slidein YouTube and Instagram, follow, like, all that stuff. And we'll see you next time.
See you then.